I'm Richard Smoley. I'm your moderator. I'm editor of Quest Magazine and Quest Books. And I don't think I need to introduce any of the panel members since they're all quite familiar to you and you've had quite a bit of exposure to them. So I would begin by asking some questions, and maybe we would, some of them will be from group discussions, one or two might be my own, and maybe at some point toward the end we can take some open questions from the audience if that sounds good to people. Okay. All right. Well, let's start with a fairly general one. How do we relate the realm of spiritual consciousness to the materialistic world? How do we develop skills to understand and apply spiritual consciousness to our world and sustain this consciousness in our daily lives? Who would like to get started with this one?
I'll start. Very, very simply, by living it. Not about talking, yes, by simply living it. Of course, there'll be a follow-up question, how do you live it? Well, you live it by living it, by doing, by trying, by trial and error. Amit has given us this great introduction about the development, the old Darwinian theory by trial and error. You make mistakes, you learn. How do you learn as a child, right? You don't start off perfectly. You fall, you learn, you get burnt by fire. But Amit has given us this great insight today about love and group work and love, which I think is so important.
Thank you. Thank you. Would anyone else like to follow up on that?
Well, a little bit. No, I mean, no. A huge amount of talking is not necessary. But it is important to complement the trial and error method by also learning to quantum think very early on, as early as possible. As children do it anyway. They have a lot of unconscious processing. But the thing is that we can do processing at two levels. Trial and error is only the aware conscious level, but then the unconscious. How to get the unconscious engaged with your problem? This is something that one needs to learn. So the idea is to focus on the problem, you know, like a scientist does. Roland gave you a perfect example of the intensity that a scientist brings to the question that a scientist is asking. Artists have the same kind of intensity. Children can easily master that kind of intensity, but today it's wasted for vain things like web searching and stuff like that. We need to bring them back to actual real problems of love, emotions, truth, beauty, justice, these things. So that's something that we all can do because we can do it for ourselves and we can do it for our children. Right?
Is this on? Now's it on? There we go. I have to switch. Yeah, I'd like to address that one as well because it's really what our work is all about, is your question. At least from my perspective, we really do have a spirit, a soul, higher self, whatever you want to call it. And it's really all about alignment. And how do we align ourselves more in our 3D mind-brain system with our higher self in our daily lives? And that's what coherence is all about. It's really alignment in what all the tools that we have created are for, is to give people the how-to. That's always the question. It's always, you know, great religions and everything always talk about it. But it, what's missing for most people is the actual ABC of here's how you actually do that.
Exactly.
And that's really what HeartMath is all about. I'm not trying to do a big HeartMath plug, but that is our mission and what our focus has been since day one. And our founder, Doc Childrey, has always insisted that we make things really simple, which kind of drove me crazy at first, you know. But it had to be something for the masses, something that anybody could learn and get benefit out of, that everybody has a heart, and the heart is the main doorway to that part of our higher or large. That's what I meant yesterday when I said about self-regulating our behaviors from a more intelligent and a reference point. That's how I really say that, as simple as I can say it. So it's, people need tools, especially when they're beginning. I mean, you know, once we learn them, great, but most people don't have those tools.
What would you say would be a good step what would you say would be a good step, just a basic first step or second step? I know I'm asking you to ask us, tell us, how do you love?
Sure. One of the beginning steps for a lot of people is one of our simplest techniques called quick coherence. First step one is called heart-focused breathing. You literally put your focus of attention, pretend as though you're breathing through the center of your chest. Breathe at a 10-second rhythm, 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out. That starts a physiological shift. Then you have to, with conscious and intent, activate a feeling of love or appreciation or care or compassion, but with intention to do that. For a lot of people, like, what are you talking about? They're so disassociated from those kinds of feelings. Then you can say, okay, remember a time when you really felt good, when you felt that appreciation, that love. And now try and recreate that feeling. Then we have to go in and talk about, usually for a lot of people, this is not about visualization, it's not about thinking. It's really about activating and experiencing that feeling. And then you're starting to develop new brain circuits as you do that, and you do it enough. But I actually would say one, in addition to brain circuits, yes, that's real, we're also developing energetic level circuits as well, that with that connection to our large or whatever word people are comfortable with. There's also energetic circuits in our energetic bodies that have to be developed, which is kind of like, whether you want to call it morphogenic fields or other types of fields that I tend to think of as well, that both are going on at both levels.
I'd like to add one more thing. No, I think I am wired.
I'm sure you are.
I heard the question in terms of how do you, I think, maybe transcend the materialistic world, but I think we need to be very practical. We are in a materialistic world. And I think that the gift that we have as theosophists is that we have a different mindset. We are respectful. I'm very respectful of the wage I can earn, but I'm also not greedy. And there's a difference between earning and greediness. We're all very clear in this room what the difference is, but the existence of this materialistic world, in our belief system or in our practice actually of centering, of meditation, we're all as theosophists understanding, and it's right with what everyone else is saying, we cannot open crown, we cannot get creativity until heart and head are matched. And Rollin has these wonderful things we can actually put in the classroom to help children at a more practical level, and those of us who are in our philosophy and our theosophy, we understand the importance. I think that the more centered we are, the better decisions we make. And those of us who have great wealth share it.
Very good. Thank you. To follow up on that, I would be interested to know what each of you thinks of the current status of mass culture and the culture at large, and to what extent very cutting-edge ideas like this are being accepted, likely to be accepted, will be accepted.
Well, I guess here we go again. No one else is talking, so let me be the first to put my foot in my mouth. As a child of the 50s, I grew up at a time when people were actually saying, we can change the world, we can rearrange the world. In the 60s, as you know, we stood up against an unjust war. We stood up against terrible discrimination in this country. And people did it not, if you listen to Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, you know, not only marching with picket signs and those things, people turn on, right? And of course, they dropped out. But what they did is they set new models of how we could work together, how we could really function, and it transformed society. Because of what happened then, we are now. And we are more caring, more compassionate. We understand, yes, this word about love, you know. And, you know, there's a line in theosophical literature about the voice of the masters is always in the world. And of course, popular music really conveys to so many people. And as you know, all you need is love. Love is all you need is one of the great things. So all of those ideas are there. And we, in turn, have to guide it a little. I think the work of theosophists is to guide this trend, help give it a certain direction. Otherwise, it just keeps going wherever the flow will go. Oh, but to answer your question, I am remarkably hopeful and positive about culture today. I think I'm hopeful and enthusiastic about the work of our society today. Culture, you know, in New York, we just had people who gave us this idea of the 99% and the 1%. All, you know, and yet it entered consciousness. It changed the way we think. And one of the great things in those Mahatma letters is the idea they give us about ideas rule the world.
Yeah.
You know, and as men's minds change, and women's too, but women's minds are changed already. But, you know, it's amazing to think that just in the past century, women couldn't vote. In South Africa, you couldn't vote. In the South, you couldn't vote, depending on who you were. And these are momentous changes that for the past 2,000 years hadn't happened. And they've happened in a very short time. Because of media today, we are aware of what's happening in Syria. We are aware of traumas. We've helped change the way things happen in Burma. You know, there is more of this idea about being my brother's keeper, of I can't just let millions be slaughtered in Rwanda and just say, oh, well, that's them and that's their problem. There really is an awakening today that is so positive and so wonderful. It may be an undercurrent, but it is there, and it's a mighty wave that really is working through society.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to take that on? Anyone else?
I think sometimes when we look at our history and look at our current existence, I think we're a bit of a pendulum. And I'm not the historian, so I can't quote, but as I look at the things I've learned, it seems like sometimes we go a little too far one way, and it's like there's just this massive change that is in the wind that says, no, wait a minute, we're going too far that way, let's go on to this way. I think the fact that we have this HeartMath Institute, the fact that we had Therapeutic Touch by Dora, the fact that though many of these things that maybe were not discussed many years ago is the awakening and the opening, and the fact that the pendulum, I believe, is continuing to evolve.
But Robin, don't you think that's in the nature of cyclicity itself? That is how cyclicity works.
I think it is. I think you're correct.
Anyone else?
All right, I'll risk it. Directly answer your question, I think it's a mess, society. Look at the news. It's more stressful right now than it ever has been, at least in our, I won't say ever, I mean, that's not quite right, but there's a lot of stress going on in a lot of people's lives. I mean, all the polls, stress is increasing. We've got more, if the real data, there's more volcanoes going on, there's more earthquakes. Earth is itself stressing. Global warming is real, you know, whatever the cause. I'm not here to that. So our political system's a mess right now. I mean, I think we're seeing the fall of democracy, frankly. To be really honest, it's a real mess going on. So at the same time, I believe we are in the midst of a planetary shift in consciousness. Consciousness evolves. I completely agree. And for the old, if you're at a really seeing what's going on from another level of consciousness, it's really good what's going on, because the old systems have to give way. They've got to crumble a bit for the new to emerge from the chaos, so to speak. And I think that's exactly what's happening. So there's two forces going on, right? There is a facilitated planetary shift happening in human consciousness, which is exactly the heart and the head coming together, more of that higher, we call it higher fourth level awareness. Into a 3D mind-brain system. So there's a lot of stress going on, and it's not over. It's going to get worse before it gets better, from my perspective. But it's really good. So, but at the same time, we have to have a lot of compassion and do everything we can to help the people who are going through that, these stressful times. But I'm very hopeful as well. I have no doubt that we're going to come through it on the other side. Not necessarily in our lifetime, I agree with that, but I don't think it's going to be another 2,000 years before the next shift, since the last consciousness shift, more like 50, 75 years, in my estimation. But so there's an answer for you.
Thank you. Well, let's go on to a more specifically theosophical question. Here's one from the panel. How far have we come in realizing the TS destiny? What are the practical steps in achieving TS objectives?
Why is everyone looking at me?
There we go.
Okay, here we go again. Think of the TS, you know, one of the ideas that has become very dominant in our time is the idea of the chakras. And one of Dora's ideas is the chakras, and Leadbeater certainly, are unfolding. Right? As you move up this scale, it's an unfolding thing. Think of the TS also as an organic, living, growing thing that is unfolding. Its full nature hasn't been realized yet, but it is in its process of learning and discovering its own nature. So this is an unfolding process. I don't think in any esoteric movement they strike a keynote and it's suddenly all done. You know, it's a continuing thing. They were discussing Kabbalah during the Renaissance, but we're learning more about how to make those ideas practical. Rosicrucian, Hermeticism, those ideas were all, a keynote was struck, and that vibration keeps circulating through time. So again, I don't want to be Pollyanna, or maybe I do in this group, but I am always very, very positive because I see it. I see it in you. I see it in all of you. I see that you've taken time, you know, to come such long distances, to get together, to share, to work out our problems, to bring joy here. So, and I've enjoyed myself, too. So, again, and then what can we do just to keep on doing? Of course, there will be new ways of seeing the same thing. We're not seeing the Theosophical Society as they saw it in the 19th century. I mean, they didn't have, electricity was just coming in. The internet, you know, I must tell you, people will look back and this development of the internet will be one of the most dramatic things since the printing press. The great Canadian philosopher Marshall McLuhan has said, though it's attributed to Buckminster Fuller, electronic technology recreates the world in the image of a global village. Yeah. We are all so much more connected now, right? And it's, if you look at young kids today, they automatically know what to do. You don't have to teach them about getting online, pressing this button, apps, everything. So they are all wired, like Robin, connected. If you look at the words, because you know, I used to be a publicist in my past incarnation with the music business, and you find these words, getting yourself connected, right? There really is this underlying, and just to mention on your point, I think the media, especially TV, really focuses on the negativities. When there is a disaster, we all then focus. But you don't hear that Johnny got an A in his test, that someone helped a lady across the street. The good things, you really don't hear. It's the horror that then captures our attention as we have that remote. So, but the internet has helped change that. You know, people are making dramatic changes. Mm-hmm. So what can we do? Study, service, meditation, right? Those are the basis. But to rev it up a little, we need now to bring it up to another notch, to really try. That's the thing the Mahatmas have told us. We have one word for all aspirants, and that is try.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Since Michael did not add the entire story, I would, if I were in charge of the Theosophy website, you must have one, the central, the most central website of the Theosophist. I would put a one-page thing on it, and which says with the headline, "Why I'm proud to be a Theosophist." Yes. Number one, Madame Blavatsky, our founder, said the first doctrine: consciousness is the ground of all being. Now this is gaining acceptance to more and more by a majority of consciousness researchers. Not from scientific materialists, we don't have to say that, but people who study consciousness, this idea is really gaining traction. People more and more and more acknowledge from different areas of research. They may not agree about the details, how this comes about, but they agree that consciousness is a better basis for reality than matter or anything else. So that's number one. Number two, Madame Blavatsky emphasized that science and spirituality should come together and Theosophy should play a major role in it. That also has come together. You mentioned chakras. That is good. That's one of the good things, that evolution of consciousness, the way that Madame Blavatsky predicted sixth race, well, it's a little premature for that. But the idea that we'll have a future human race that will be more loving, more gentle, more compassionate, more just, there's no doubt about it. We already are in the process of realizing it with ideas that are coming from many spheres. So, I mean, I'm just giving you a hint of how to begin such a one-page thing, but do it. I really would like to see that. I certainly am very proud that I have been involved with Theosophy for so long.
And we're proud that you're proud.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Okay, well, let's go on. Here's a question that that comes out of the discussion groups, and this one is for Robin. What can we do to protect our core energy?
Well, first of all, acknowledge it. Recognize it. Understand that you have a core and that it is a gift just as breath. And the core, recognize when you've tapped it. And I've been asked that question several times, and I know personally when I've tapped it, it's an exhaustion that's different than I just need a good night's sleep. It's a quiver in my body that I know that, oh dear, I really did push too hard. And then the acknowledgement that I shan't do that again. I want to protect this core so I can live the life my genetics is saying I might live. It's individual. It's up to each person. I think through your centering, I'm going to keep saying that because that's really what we're here for. Through that centering, through your meditation, acknowledge it, recognize it, seek it, meet it if you don't know it, so that you know if you've touched it.
Would anyone else like to comment on that question?
I would also suggest grounding.
Oh, good.
Grounding. Grounding. And Robin had the suggestion during her talk, just gardening, getting your hand, touching the earth. There's nothing better for grounding than just getting into that soil, even if you have a little plant at home. You know, to nurture something, I think, is a good...
It's a good idea.
It's a good basis to start.
Thank you. Well, on a related topic for Rollin, what is the relationship between quiet meditation and coherent heart rhythm variance?
Depends on what you mean by quiet meditation, I guess. The natural physiological response to when we're genuinely or sincerely feeling a positive emotion, appreciation, care, compassion, you know, in a sustained way, is coherence. That's the way we're wired. That's how we discovered it. We had been getting people in different emotional states, and voila, this very distinct physiological state kept occurring that was co-varied with positive emotions. So the meditations, I mean, we've looked at this as of others. Some of the Buddhist practice, loving kindness, people are in coherence. In fact, one of my colleagues went over and looked at long-term Buddhist meditators, those that had been monks for 5 years or more. They were walking around coherent.
Yeah.
2 years or less, no, they weren't yet. That's what they found. Some of the coherence building techniques, the tools and techniques I'm talking about, you can learn how to get coherence in 5 minutes. Now, it takes a lot of practice to remember to do it and to be able to sustain that. And it's not always about walking around in a coherent state anyway, but emotionally coherent, yes. That's a different kind of thing. I made the comment yesterday, and I get in trouble when I say this, if I'm really honest, a lot of meditation techniques are disassociation techniques. They're get out of here, go smile off somewhere. Great, if you do that for short periods, but that's not about being here in this dimension, in this world, connecting with people in a genuine way, caring about them, doing something to help the world and other people. So I'm not big on disassociation techniques. I'm just not, sorry. I'll even go a little farther out there and probably make some people angry. Some long-term meditator friends of mine, and I used to be one. I meditated for 15 years before I really discovered the heart other than just a concept. I'm having to work with them now to get them out of that because they've got a lot of health problems. If you're really disassociated into this low variability state, you bring a flat line into our system. So they're losing blood pressure control mechanisms, all this kind of stuff that now they're having to work very hard to undo because they've trained themselves into this disassociated flatline state. I'm sure it feels good while they're zooming off in the universe, but anyway, so.
Good.
I don't know if I answered your question or not. But.
Oh, thank you. Let's see here. Question for Amit. Can we develop new ways of being, new brain paths that will help with the prevention or mitigation of dementia to any significant degree?
Say it again.
Can we develop new ways of being, new brain paths that will help with the prevention or mitigation of dementia to any significant degree?
Dementia.
You are.
That's a good question to ask because I'm old enough to really that age where one has to consider the possibility at least. I think that the research is already showing something. I'm on that, right? I just forgot, but it is done, right?
Yep.
Already, so I don't need this. Okay, so. Be creative. There is just no doubt about the fact that if you are creative, mind will be engaged. The story that came out in Newsweek this week is very poignant. It's suggesting that if you are machine-like, engaging with machine day after day, hour after hour, like young kids are doing today, it's disaster. That's the new research is showing that. And there's this great article in Newsweek. Read it, how dangerous that can be. But what is it telling us? It's telling us that if we engage like machines, if we engage with chemicals, this one we already have known from drug addiction, drug culture. If you engage with chemicals, we accentuate that part of us which is mechanical. And that is how we get into addiction. We get into a circuit from which we cannot come out. It is very important to retain openness. How can we do that? That's concept of moderation. We don't get into any circuit deeply, not one constantly, but all of our circuits, we keep them engaged. But even more than that, they're just brain circuits. We must engage the mind every day. How do we do that? By paying attention to new ways of thinking, by paying attention to imagination. Active imagination techniques you can teach your child. Children love doing this stuff, by the way. If you teach them, they are automatic imaginers. They love to be in that fantasy world. In fact, some of the computer games became attractive to children because they initially fostered imagination a lot. Like the wizard and all those games, the initial games. But then they became gory and violent and stuff. What I'm saying is that it applies to all ages. If older people only knew not to be retired in the mind, okay, you are retired in the body because, of course, there are physical necessities, but, mind should be active. If the mind is engaged, which means new thoughts, not the thoughts that are already in the brain, but new thoughts, imagination, creativity, innovation, intuition. If we engage with those things, there's just no way that we'll suffer from dementia. No way. Another thing is satisfaction. Mm. Lack of satisfaction keeps the crown chakra starved of vital energy, and that causes depression. Why are old people depressed so much? Just look around. You are not depressed because you are engaged. That's theosophy does that for you. But most people out there, they're not engaged in anything. And so what happens is that they don't have any satisfaction in their life. And when you don't have satisfaction, the crown chakra stirs from energy. And so that engagement that gives you satisfaction has to be brought out. How does one get satisfaction? Satisfaction can be gotten by these positive emotions. So we should really emphasize, and I'm just so delighted that in this room, all of us, four panelists and many people in the audience, they're all into developing this positive outlook towards life. If we could just bring that message to older people, that yes, you can still use neuroplasticity to make new brain circuits and keep engaged and satisfied, that would be such a wonderful contribution. Also bring the medical cost down enormously.
Richard, just I would say, and the easiest way for theosophists is just to read through the Secret Doctrine page by page. If you want to keep your brain active, just read through that book page by page by page. Believe me, your brain will just be rewired on its own. I'm telling you, just... But you laugh, and I tell you, when I was just starting out in my own background as theosophist, I went to Vancouver to meet a very elderly lady who had been a student of one of Madame Blavatsky's. She had been very active, and when I met her, she could not really walk. And I said, "Don't you miss your active life?" And she said, she pointed to her Secret Doctrine in the Mahatma letter, she said, "No, I have the universe at my fingertips." And I always found that, so inspiring, that even if the body keeps wearing out, which is a good thing, because if we had the consciousness that we have when we're older in a new body, when we're young, we would be devastating to the world. So it's a good thing to slow down, to digest, and yet to have access to those ideas.
I just wanted to mention one more thing, which I said before. Dementia, the word, sends terror through many people. And it isn't a word that should send terror. It's simply, I'm emphasizing what everyone else is saying, which is burning new pathways, creating new pathways. I remember George Linton. Some of you who remember George was a longtime theosophist. And I remember I was kind of like a child of them because we ended up buying their house that George built. And when George and Dulcie were living in a care center, basically a care center, George would walk every day. Now, I mean walk, he walked like, 2 inches a little bit, just around the block. And then when he would go back into his room, he had all of his books. And anytime I would go to visit George and Dulcie, he was restudying all of the books of all of the theosophical teachings that mattered to him. And I just remember feeling quite inspired.
And also, Robin, on that idea, when you get older, you forget a lot, so it's like reading new literature all over again.
It's true.
Yeah, like seeing the movie over and over.
It's true.
Well, here's a question for Michael.
Oh, no.
If Blavatsky were alive today, with all the technological advances and the possibility of nuclear destruction of human life, what would her message be for today's culture?
To learn, to live, and love one another. Remember, The Voice of the Silence, her last book, is summarized so easily. To live to benefit mankind is the first step to practice those six glorious virtues, is the other. I can't imagine that her, though, on a computer typing The Secret Doctrine and not remembering to press save, and that whole book being wiped out, or also typing and rolling a cigarette. You know, she had this habit of writing and rolling at the same time. They said they knew she was sick when she stopped rolling and smoking her cigarettes. But I think that she would just simply give us a little more push. Yes, you can. You know, I think there's this wave of fatalism that has come with materialistic life, that we just get into this complacency and I don't matter. I think she would just push us along that road that winds uphill. Yes, we can. Yes, you can do it. Come on, keep moving, try. And it's not so much that we need new literature. You know, if the literature is there, we just need to look at it in new eyes and in new ways.
Very good, thank you. Now I think I will turn to the audience to see if you have any questions you'd like to address to any or all of the panel members. John.
Thank you. I just have one question, if you could elaborate a little more about what you mean by dissociative meditation techniques and practices, and you know, why you think, first of all, if you can tell us what they are in your point of view, and the detrimental effects of them.
Well, I need to probably modify that a little bit. I'm not saying that meditation, even those that dissociate, is detrimental in short term, and it's like you make a life practice out of it, but disassociation, it's like the clinical disorder, if you're familiar with that, where you disassociate from reality. So a lot of relaxation techniques are basically little steps towards disassociation. I'm going to separate from myself. I'm going to zoom out here and, you know, not be associated with my body. Would be one type of disassociation that it, like a lot of relaxation techniques have. Not all. I mean, I'm well aware of that. God, I hope I'm probably going to offend, no matter what I say, I'm always conscious I'm going to offend somebody. TM, you know, the people on the inner circle, you know, that's one of the big problems. A lot of people disassociate and actually end up with clinical disorders who are long-term practitioners of TM. It's the dirty secret they don't want you to know, but it's true. So I hope that helps answer your question.
Can I just add a little bit to this? There are many forms of meditation. I don't think he's criticizing the basic meditation of increasing the gap between thoughts.
No, Lord.
That's the basic meditation. It just slows us down. It's very useful. Yes. In fact, this breathing technique that he also is suggesting, that does slow down the organs, slows down the... So that's very useful. That continues to be useful. Don't give up that. Don't give up concentration meditation either. Everybody needs attention. So those things are fine. Disassociation is this idea of self-hypnotizing ourselves, forget the world, and also this out-of-the-body experience, that too is a disassociative technique. When we are very fearful, we automatically jump out of the body. We have that experience automatically. In some form of meditation, that is also encouraged because it's so wonderful to be disassociated from the world, from the body. Those are the things I think Roland is talking about, and they can be dangerous, yes.
It is, yeah, and unfortunately, that's what a lot of things guide people towards. And it's also become part of modern life, is people having to disassociate from the pain they see, for example. It's one of the big, we do a lot of work in the military. I mean, we call it all kinds of things, but it's ultimately they've disassociated. They have to. Depression is really, from my perspective, you're cut off from your heart because it's your deeper heart core feelings that nourish, you know, that give us that sense of purpose in life. So you're disassociating from that part of yourself, basically. So it's multiple levels I'm really talking about, disassociating from our own deeper inner sense of right and wrong, morality, if you will, and from others.
When I hear you say this, to me, you're saying escapism. Let's not go into escapism. So I think we all understand that.
And meditation, the fruit of meditation that we don't hear about, should give you that insight, some realization into the problem, into the condition, instead of just, and as Krishnamurti says, an empty mind is just an empty mind.
Good one.
Thank you. Next question will go to Pablo.
Yeah, it was actually a comment on this. It's similar to what Robin said, so I don't have much to add. But the problem to me is not with meditation in particular. It's with this attitude of using things to escape from reality, whether it is meditation, study, money, pleasure. And that's why in theosophy, there is always a very strong emphasis on why we meditate before we start learning any technique, which is something that not all traditions in the West put much emphasis on.
Okay. I think David had a question.
Brian, to you, and then I'd like others to add to it if you care to. Your name?
Roland.
Sorry about that. I didn't even have the first initial right, honey. Could you address the techniques that your company and associates have developed to the problem that we have now in the military with the ascendance of PTSD?
Okay. First of all, PTSD is not the big issue in the military. I know that's what the media, TBI and PTSD, it's actually the small percentage of what returning service members are facing. It's really disassociation. We call it other things. It's depression is probably double the incidence of PTSD. Associative disorders, it's called a number of things, is probably four times the number of people with PTSD. That's what latest reports are really showing. With that said, actually, a clinical study has been done using HeartMath, which are really basically, the HeartMath techniques are self-regulation techniques. They are techniques that allow us to better self-regulate ourselves, our emotions, our behaviors, is what they ultimately are. Those have been taught in a clinical study, actually, in South Carolina to current PTSD people returning. In this case, it was from Iraq, with really phenomenal outcomes, improvements in cognitive functions. Especially, which the researcher there feels drove all the other improvements, was simply that ability to self-regulate. The trigger happens, I now can do something to self-regulate that trigger, that gap between, you know, like you were really talking about, it's creating a little bit longer gap in our consciousness between the stimulus and the reaction, where we can self-regulate. Anyway, that's what they did. And that correlated with improved symptomatology out in the real world. It was a small pilot study, which led to a much larger study, which is going on right now in that particular population, which is getting very similar results from what I'm hearing so far. But meanwhile, our stuff's being used in PTSD clinics. We're in 80 VA hospitals now, being used actively for a wide range, PTSD, pain management, many things like that. So I don't know if I've answered your question or not.
But you are.
I have no idea. I really don't. There are over 10,000 healthcare providers who are certified in training HeartMath. So there's thousands and thousands. I mean, on the active duty side, I personally trained over 3,000 soldiers and sailors myself in the last couple of years on active duty. I'm sorry?
I've done at least 300.
You've done at least 300? Okay. Oh, who are you? I'm sorry. just tell us a bit. I mean, I'd love to hear what you're what to say. Okay.
And I've used PTSD training in infants, not just from war, but infants who go through PTSD and depression, and just hard math techniques with infants and their parents.
Great, thank you.
All ages. I'd love you to talk about also what you've done with gangs and kids in trouble.
In light of the situation in Colorado, could you talk? I know that you've done tremendous work with HeartMath in gangs and gang violence and helping stressed out kids. Could you say a little bit more about that?
I don't want this to become a HeartMath commercial, but yes, you're right. I mean, HeartMath is the again, it's simple self-regulation techniques. So they've been incorporated into gang violence programs, like you're saying, into there's a whole movement called Be Peace, I think. Started out of Costa Rica, where the HeartMath is the core of that. That's being
Marina, right.
Which is reaching thousands of kids. Kind of, they've actually gone more global now, from what I understand.
She has her institute here now.
Yeah, does she? Okay. Oh, when you say here, you mean
in the United States, right?
I'm really not the best person to speak to that. I'm research director, but we have a whole other team that works with those kinds of things. But I mean, 60-some universities are now incorporating HeartMath in their courses. If you're going to be a nurse and all, just all kinds of things that I can't begin to. Okay. But your question was for other panel members as well that you had asked, David. So.
I just wondered if anybody else had a comment, but that's fine. Because I'm passionately concerned about the PTSD issue.
Okay. As you should be. But again, PTSD is real, but there's a much bigger issue going on with our returning service members.
I understand that.
And it's the hope band there is it's with intervention. It's something that they really can, and we're actually happy to prove this, recover much faster and integrate very successful lives. But they need some help. And unfortunately, that's being largely ignored.
Roland, I have another question related to your talk. Has there been any study whether people with pacemakers have difficulty achieving coherence?
Yeah, if you have a pacemaker and are being actively paced, you know, you've got basically a flat line HRV. There is no interbeat interval, okay? Or if you have a heart transplant, there is no autonomic innervation to the heart, so they're more or less flat line variability. So from an HRV, heart rate variability coherence perspective, no, you won't be able to measure that. That does not mean that the self-regulation techniques, which are really working at more of your energetic mind-brain level, don't work. They do. In fact, one of the most touching letters I ever got from somebody was from a person with a heart transplant, where HeartMath, the tools literally transformed his life. We hear about it all the time. But so it's not just about the physiological measure. You still have all the energetic stuff going on. So just because you have a pacemaker or an arrhythmia, you can't use HRV if you have an arrhythmia, current arrhythmia going on either, because it's not the heartbeat isn't sinus node mediated. But anyway, long answer to a question.
I think you had a question.
This is still another question for Roland. Has HeartMath been used with autistic children or LDHD children?
Yes. In fact, there's another clinical study with ADHD, really well-done study showing a number of cognitive improvements. With autism, there's a bunch of small studies that have been done, and so none that are actually published. There's some dissertations that are published, but that's actually a growing area. I'm hearing more and more about people using HeartMath in autism.
Okay, one more question.
I just have a general question about permanent change based on the baseline that Roland was talking about. If you're kind of up here, how long would someone have to practice that loving meditation? And it doesn't have to be necessarily HeartMath, but to have some kind of permanent change where you feel that you are mostly in coherence and then just little things might set you off rather than you're always up here.
I have an answer, but I want to see if these guys respond first. Well, just my experience over a lot of years has been typically about 6 weeks. However, there's a lot of variation in that. How deeply set are the old neural patterns you're trying to overcome is a big factor. Even more, I think, important is how meaningful are you about starting to self-regulate to make a change. Because change and creating, especially a new baseline shift, takes energy. It takes effort. I think I said this about 100 times yesterday in my talk. It's not just going to happen. You know, it's the problem with New Age, by the way. They're all waiting for the spaceship to come and beam them up and all that, thinking that, I mean, I'm probably upsetting somebody here again, but sorry. But it's we have to do it. We call it at HeartMath. You have to do a one, right? And then your own large can come in and help facilitate that, but you've got to do something. and remembering to do it, to take the effort. Okay, somebody cut me off in traffic. My typical pattern is to get frustrated and irritated and so on and so on, you know, and blow out a lot of energy. Well, it takes energy to change that pattern. Wait a minute. No, I actually just learned this cool little technique. It's really simple. I'm going to do it right in this moment. That takes energy and it takes attention, right? But the more we start doing that, we're starting to create new neural and, I think, energetic circuits. So that becomes easier. So it's the meaningfulness is the biggest factor in how long it takes to establish that as a new familiar or a new baseline, okay. Which is also the big problem in our returning military people. They've way got a baseline shift, right, to the hyperarousal, the wrong place. They need to reset their baseline. So anyway.
One last question, not for Rollin.
Oh. Great.
Well, it kind of is in a little bit. But I wondered if in your research, if you use people like Robin to also see what's going on. So at the same time that you're using the machine and they're getting the feedback from the machine, have you used people with her gifts to see what's happening also in the field around them, et cetera?
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay. Well, we're a bit past our time, so we're going to end here.